And we talk constantly about it's a candidate rich, talent poor market. And when we, you know, I don't mean to offend anyone in that, it's actually, I see it as a huge opportunity.
Welcome to the Safety Podcast with your host, all the way from a small green island in the wild Atlantic Ocean, Richard Collins.
Hey there, thanks for joining us on the Safety Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Collins. We're back again with the second episode in our mini-series with Anna Keane from Acre Frameworks. Anna is herself the founder and director of Acre Frameworks, which is an innovative division of the wider Acre Recruitment Group, which is one of the biggest specialist recruitment agencies in the UK. And they're leading the way in helping the development of HSE professionals. Coming up for you in this episode, Anna and I are going to discuss the key issues the professionals are facing when they're trying to take that leap into a leadership role. Anna has some really useful insights which I know will be helpful for anyone looking to progress their personal development and their career. Before we move on to our conversation with Anna, I want to give a very big thank you out to the sponsor for this mini-series, which is AyresWeb. AyresWeb have been recently recognized once again as one of the top global EHS software providers by independent research firm Verdantix. Their latest product, Ava, is designed with a fresh, clean, and intuitive user interface, which is supported by some of the most advanced architecture in the market, providing your organization with a flexible foundation for the future. When the team at AyresWeb showed me around the Ava platform, one of the big things that stood out for me was the simplicity. A key focus for the development of the platform is that two clicks will get you anywhere in the system. That's my kind of software. They're building a system that puts the user experience at the heart of the development. And of course, that makes our jobs easier and allows both ourselves and other users to minimize admin time and focus on adding value elsewhere. If you're interested in seeing what EHS software could do for you and you would like to hear more about AyresWeb's Ava system, I'll drop a link on the podcast page for you to go directly through, or of course you can also visit ayresweb.com for more in-depth information or to request a demo of the platform. Thanks again to AyresWeb for supporting the Safety Podcast. Anna Keane, welcome back on to the Safety Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
I'm glad you agreed to come back on for the second session.
My pleasure.
And I'm looking forward to getting into this conversation. This podcast, we're going to look at challenging for change and how we, in a profession, sometimes we hit a brick wall and we're trying to get that next step up on the career ladder or the next, you know, challenging job role or whatever it may be, but we're not having any luck. So my first question to you, Anna, is what is the problem here? Can you give us a little bit of an overview of how you see this issue from your perspective?
Yeah, I think, so I spent the last sort of 3.5 years now studying and working with people in the profession around their development. And I think a lot of it is actually, it's around people's ability, willingness to look at themselves and self-reflect. It's around, I think actually a lot of it's around how safety professionals have been trained. I know there's, you know, I've interviewed people that can show me a whole selection of qualifications and certificates, but then when I ask them about influencing someone or how they've driven change, they talk to you about how they've told them or how they've recited legislation. And I also think people are willing to, or not willing to, get uncomfortable sometimes. Any kind of change is uncomfortable. It, you know, that's why they call it your comfort zone, and stepping outside of it is a stretch, and it feels uncomfortable. And I think a lot of people don't even know how to take that first step or how to find support in order to take that first step. So that's what I'm really passionate about, is actually supporting people to make this change. It's identifying what changes they need to make and where their strengths sit, but also, you know, giving them the support and the reassurance, the, you know, the point of reflection, the challenge sometimes to step outside their comfort zone and do something different. So I think by nature, also this profession is risk adverse. And actually sometimes those traits, you know, the high rule following that we've seen when we look at, you know, some of the assessment profiling we've done, the highly conventional elements actually they play in when you ask someone to try something different, it feels uncomfortable. Mm. So yeah, I think people need to be given permission to do a bit of self-reflection and a bit of exploring.
So we're afraid to change, and taking risks is many times not inherent in our character, or we're too used to keeping things as they are and sitting in our own little safe zone. How did you actually find, you know, that this issue existed within the profession?
Quite simply, when clients had to keep coming to us to find candidates. So I think recruitment can be seen as a bit of a necessary evil sometimes, but actually clients were coming to us because they were really struggling to identify the right people with the right technical competence, but more so with the right non-technical competence. So all those skills that we've spoken around, and actually, you know, they were having to pay us to identify people to do that, because they weren't there when they were putting an advert out. They were getting an abundance of applications, and we talk constantly about it's a candidate rich, talent poor market. And when we, you know, I don't mean to offend anyone in that, it's actually, I see it as a huge opportunity. It's actually, yeah, without the right technical competence, you know, someone's going to need to go through a very steep learning curve. But actually without the right non-technical competence, that's sometimes even harder to overcome, because actually we're talking about changing behaviours. I believe the technical piece can be learnt. Experience is obviously, you know, the third part of that triangle that needs to be developed over time. But I think some of these non-technical competencies, clients were coming to us and saying, I can find everyone that's got the right qualification and the right, you know, membership level of IOSH, but actually what I can't find is people that understand business or can influence at a senior level or can coach or you know, even look for new ways of doing things. So I think there's so many of the skill sets that aren't taught traditionally that meant that, you know, as a recruiter, we still had a place in market where we could have been wiped out quite easily if there was abundance of this skill set. Mm-hmm. So
when we talk about some of these skills that are missing, then going into more detail on that, can you talk a little about sort of what types of things that we need to do more specifically to allow us to develop, you know, on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a framework of competencies. Who, anyone that listens to this is, you know, I'm happy for them to get in touch, and I'll give full disclosure of what our framework is, because I, you know, I believe that actually that list of competencies was created by leaders in the profession for people in the profession. So I'm happy to share that.
Excellent.
But for me, actually, what underlies all of this is curiosity. So actually curiosity about yourself, about your own development, but about the world around you, the world of work, and who you engage with on a daily basis. I think another key element for us, and something we do a lot of coaching with clients, but about reflection. And this is not, we've got data that backs this up. This health and safety is not a reflective profession. We're very reactive. We're very much on to the now and next. Our priorities change depending on what the business needs from us. And actually, we don't build in reflective practice to our work. I've asked this question of, I can't even imagine how many groups over the years, but how many people actually diarize time for their own reflection? And they don't. So I think that's really important. And then vulnerability is a word that we talk about quite a lot at ACRE Frameworks, bravery, vulnerability. But for me, it's about being willing to give something a try without knowing what the outcome is. And that is not, that's not second nature. That's not being conditioned into health and safety professionals. In fact, they've almost been conditioned to predetermine every outcome that could possibly take place and control it. And actually, some of what we're asking people to do is to get a bit vulnerable in their practice, and to look at, okay, maybe I'll try something, maybe I'll do a micro experiment, maybe I'll have a different conversation today, I'll be a bit curious, I'll ask some different questions, I don't know how that's going to go. And then I'll reflect on it afterwards to understand what went well, first and foremost, and then what would I do differently next time. So for me, these are sort of three principles we use in our methodology, in our practice here, that I think are so critical to this ongoing change of the profession. And whether you have, you know, an extensive training budget or nothing at all, actually getting more curious, spending more time reflecting and thinking about how vulnerable you are as an individual are three things that anyone can do.
Vulnerability is an interesting one and a very difficult one, as you've outlined, particularly because it goes against, you know, the very being of what most of us do in terms of trying to predict outcomes and I guess traditionally looking like or feeling like we should know the answer to every question that's asked. Mm. What do you see as our biggest challenge and what stops us being vulnerable?
If we go back sort of a step, quite often it's people's understanding of what vulnerability means. So I think, you know, you have it conditioned in you to be vulnerable, especially, you know, I work in industries like construction. Suddenly, you know, we start talking about vulnerability and people think everyone's going to sort of start breaking down and crying. And actually, that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is actually it's just being open to taking that personal risk. We called it risk taking in our first framework. We're not talking about taking risks that put lives, we're talking about taking personal risks, putting your head above the parapet, challenging convention, doing something that you wouldn't normally do in the pursuit of positive change. And that for me is vulnerability, is willing to put yourself out there on a personal level, mm-hmm. to try things differently without knowing what the outcomes are. I'm not, you know, this is where it all gets quiet. I'm not saying that you put the business in a vulnerable position or the people in the business in a vulnerable position. I'm talking about what we need to do as health and safety professionals. And that's about putting ourselves in a vulnerable position in order to drive positive change. So what could I do differently? How could I interact differently? What do I need to really, you know, when it comes to your own development, what are my blind spots? What don't I know about them? How do I uncover them? Because actually I can't progress if I don't. So I think those curiosity and vulnerability are so interlinked. And without the art of reflection around that, actually, it really limits growth as well. So that to me is what vulnerability is.
Why do you think it's so difficult for us to be vulnerable in this profession then?
I think because you've been looked to as subject matter experts, and the credibility of people's or success and credibility in a role has been around their knowledge. So to, you know, to be asked a question, not to immediately give an answer, challenges that credibility. I also think people mm-hmm. have struggled in this profession to get a voice at the table or to be engaged with by the business. So, you know, for someone to pick up the phone and ask you a question can feel like such a huge leap. That could be success in its own right. You know, if you start in an organisation and no one wants anything to do with health and safety, over time, actually getting them to a point where they actually ask you the question can feel like a really great place to be. What we're saying is actually don't settle there. By always having the answer, by always trying to control situations, actually you're losing some of the benefit of where innovation can happen and growth can happen personally. So
yeah, the big challenge is how that is then perceived once you start reacting like that, I suppose. Yeah. Would that ring true with you?
Yeah, and I think absolutely. We work with a lot of people around confidence, so working on an individual's confidence actually allows them in some ways to become more vulnerable, because actually they're more self-assured going into a situation like that. So they know actually success for me looks like helping the other person to get a level of understanding, not me having the answer. I think also when you build confidence in an individual, they're more likely to try different things. And a lot of that comes down to, you know, how they reflect post an event. So if you've got someone, for example, who hates presenting. But it's really critical for their role that they stand up and they inspire others and they convey a really strong message, especially at leadership level. It's going to put them in a really vulnerable position to do that. A lot of this comes down to how people measure success. So for a number of people or people we've worked with, certainly for years, success has just looked like getting people to, you know, simply pick up the phone and ask them a question, to engage with them. And then actually them being able to validate that conversation or that need with an answer has actually been really important to that person, has actually helped them with their confidence and, you know, validated their role or provided credibility within that organization. I think what we're challenging people to do is not just to sort of settle for that, actually to think about the longer game. Can you get someone in a position where actually they don't ask you the question because you've set them up for success again? So I think a lot of that comes around to, once you've got to a place that you previously deemed success, actually how do you continue to challenge yourself on what the next sort of success or the next step looks like? I think for me, one of the things we've seen and what we coach on and train on quite often is around confidence in this profession. The rules, the framework, the structures, the processes, the systems provide people with confidence. Their technical knowledge provides someone with the confidence. And we often see people that are actually really low scoring when we come to the assessment in confidence have actually gone and acquired more technical knowledge to almost overcome that confidence issue. And for me, what we're encouraging people to do is actually to, on top of a lack of confidence that might be there already, is then to take some of that knowledge, not away, but actually don't rely on it first and foremost. So you're almost asking people that have built their confidence with technical knowledge then to step away from that technical knowledge, which is, again, really uncomfortable. And it can devalue everything you've done. You don't know what, you know, how am I delivering value to my organization if I'm not just giving them the answer? Well, it's that whole thing around, you know, either you provide someone with fish or you teach them how to fish. And actually, a lot of the time, what we're looking at doing is redefining success with people that gives them confidence and validation in the role that they're doing. So maybe they aren't giving the answer, but they're helping someone else to find the answer. That helps them build confidence, and then we reinforce and reflect on that new practice to build that skill set.
I really do agree that point of moving work away from ourselves is a massive hurdle sometimes, depending on what your position is, but it's, you know, ultimately very important if you want to push forward. More broadly, when we look at personal growth, Anna, I do often see quite a lot of people in the profession who are getting more and more certifications, qualifications on the technical end of things, but it sounds pretty clearly to me that they're not looking for that. They're looking for, as you said, the more non-technical side of things, and you need to be able to demonstrate that. Is that a fair assumption?
I absolutely believe technical underpinning is critical. Mm-hmm. But in your sort of early to intermediate career, that sort of more junior end, we absolutely, there's reliance on your technical understanding, and in certain roles there will be, but actually at any level of the organisation, your non-technical development is critical. And I actually believe that, and we're working with clients now that feel confident they can train people in the technical aspect, but actually what they want to hire is people with the right non-technical skills. So that's why, you know, I can't encourage people enough, people listening to this, actually to get curious about what are your skills? Mm. What are your, in the same way you do a gap analysis around your technical development, oh, I need to learn a bit more about working at height or confined spaces. Actually, what are your non-technical development areas? And recognizing that everyone has them. So I, you know, do exec coaching with global vice presidents, and actually they still are working on development areas. This is not something that's finite. You achieve your membership, your chartered membership, and actually you're done. This is continuous, and it's not just continuous in terms of your technical. It's more important. It's as important, and actually as you get into a leadership role, I actually believe your non-technical is more important, because when we recruit people at a senior level, when we look at, you know, exec appointments, directors of technical is almost a given. We don't even, you know, go into any technical questioning. We are always looking at someone's ability to drive change, to develop a strategy, to influence the board, to be part of the board, to, you know, innovate and be brave. And so to me, if you want, if your aspiration is actually to develop a career that takes you to that senior level, more so focus on the non-technical piece. Once you've got your technical underpinning or alongside your technical underpinning. I don't see it as an either or. I see it as these are both come hand in hand.
Yeah. From what you've seen, there's two questions I want to ask. The first one is, when we're looking at our own strengths and weaknesses, do you think from a career perspective, from what you've seen, we're better focusing on our strengths and leveraging them or identifying our weaknesses and building them up?
Okay, so I'm a true believer that first and foremost, you should absolutely leverage your strengths. So I think if you are leveraging your strengths, you enjoy what you do more, you find, you know, it's easier to engage with, people know when you're having a good time at work. I think then developing limiting behaviours to the point they don't disable you, so actually that they don't hold you back. I equally, you know, a lot of the work we do when we go through a discovery session with someone is actually to say, here are your strengths, here are your limiting behaviours. How do you use your strengths to overcome your limiting behaviours? If I can give an example, we look at driving change to others is one of our core competencies at a leadership level. And the things we look at happen to be around someone's persuasion, so how much they actually enjoy selling, which most people would think actually if you enjoy selling, you're going to be good at driving change to others. But actually, we look at a combination of things because there's a lot of people out there that don't enjoy selling, but actually what they're really good at is consulting with others, is understanding their motivations and then adapting their approach to meet those things. So it's got to be a combination of things rather than a finite, this is my, you know, I'm not very persuasive, therefore I can't sell. Actually, there's other things that you might be able to do that will help you to become better at selling. I also think if you're not a data person, don't get yourself into a data role. If you're equally, if you hate data, don't work in an organization or a team or in a role that really needs you to be data focused. You're not going to enjoy yourself. You're not going to thrive at work. So I think we do encourage people to focus on their strengths. We all have them. And then it's how you use them to overcome anything that might be limiting you in the role you do. And I think that's often the missing link is not just understanding who you are, it's understanding the impact of who you are in the role you do. And that's a lot of the work that we do is bridging that gap for people in this profession that says, you know, when is it good to be controlling in this role, when is it limiting, when is it good to be flexible, when is it limiting. And we look at a pattern of behaviors that don't just show people who they are but the impact of who they are, so they can really focus their development. And for me, that link is so critical to making any change.
So capitalizing on your strengths is obviously a major aspect that you've identified here. And you know, a lot of people would agree with that in the broader sense. I would say, do you have any tips? I know you guys have a psychometric tool in Acre where people can actually find out what their strengths are and identify their weaknesses as well, which you've let me use, and I can say it's really interesting. And we all have ideas about what we're good and what we're bad at. Can you give people listening any tips on how we can actually identify those strengths and weaknesses without using any specific tools or using your fully fledged psychometric tool?
Yeah, and you know, we just work with health and safety professionals at the moment, so you know, we have a wealth of knowledge alongside this. But this isn't, as I said at the beginning, curiosity, reflection, vulnerability aren't things that are exclusive to the work we do. Anyone can do this. So my tips to anyone listening are a really, again, discover what your role requires. So, and I don't just mean your role profile. Sit down with your manager or your key stakeholders, whoever works with you, and talk about what are the skills that you need in order to be effective in the job you're in. And actually, if you're ambitious, what are the skills you need in order to be effective in the next role you'll be in? And then gather some feedback, do a bit of self-assessment, some self-discovery, but also ask people. And I encourage you not just to ask the people that are going to give you the answer you want to hear. Find the person that actually you haven't always seen eye to eye with, and actually, you know, be a bit vulnerable, like we say, and actually ask the question, ask the difficult question. How could I improve? What could I do differently? What would it make it easier for us to work together? And I think then once you've been through that sort of what we would call discovery process, where you've been curious about your own developments, it's actually then share or identify the things you want to work on. So what strengths do you want to leverage? How do you want to do more of that? What are your limiting behaviours? And then share those with people around you, whether that's at home or at work, and explore actually what small changes you can make. And I am all about small changes that people, just small on a day-to-day differences in a conversation or a question you might ask. And being consciously aware of those small changes over time has a big impact on your effectiveness at work. So I think understanding what's expected in your role, or if you want to have a look at our framework, as I said, I'm happy to share that around what good looks like. I think gathering feedback, being really clear about what you want to focus on, and then getting support and getting experimental around actually trying some of these things is really important. I also, you know, I think people can be quite limited around CPD. I work with a lot of clients that get continuously frustrated with getting the email that says they need to update their CPD, where it feels like actually feels like a task. And to me, CPD should be something that people actually enjoy if you're doing the right kind of CPD. So find things that you're interested out, not just in terms of health and safety, but maybe outside of that. So I think there's loads going on in psychology or philosophy or tech that people can just, you know, maybe watch a TED talk or read a book or read an article. And actually, for me, people stepping outside of their comfort zone, not just in terms of their development, but actually in terms of where they would normally learn. This isn't about sitting in classrooms. All of the workshops and the training we do are very much, you know, facilitated workshops where people get to practice things and try things, create safe environments to do that. And for me, anyone can create that in their own environment. And they, if you really bring this sort of beginner's mindset and this curiosity to your practice around your development, actually it can be really exciting, really enjoyable. You know, I work in a team here that are constantly providing me with videos to watch or articles or giving me summaries of books they've read because it's interesting. So find something you're interested in. It doesn't feel like such a chore.
Yeah, I think that's good advice for anyone. And that's a challenge for those listening, to take the beginner's mindset away and use their own workplace as an experiment, experimental hub that they can test. Obviously, we've discussed about we're not encouraging you to carry out any risky work or
no.
Put anybody in the line of fire, which is hopefully obvious. But there's many things that you can do, as Anna has said, in terms of actually discovering what's expected of you, and then identifying, you know, areas where you can get feedback and areas for improvement and so on. And that's something, as you say, Anna, that we don't often do enough of, and hopefully folks can take that message away and start trying new things and taking the feedback and getting a little bit more creative.
And I think something that I often get pushback and feedback from is, I'm too busy, I don't get time for this. You know, the demands of my job mean that actually, you know, I don't have time to do my CPD. Or actually, to me, this is really critical, because if your purpose around doing this profession is to get people home safe at the end of every day, I think if there's any chance that our behaviours can be impacting someone not getting home safe at the end of the day to their family, then we have a responsibility to look at ourselves. So I think much more so than in any other profession, than in IT or finance or, you know, ops, actually, there is a real purpose to this profession that means that actually self-reflection is even more important. And carving out, as I mentioned earlier, we're really reactive as a profession, very much about now and next. And actually carving out proactive development time is really important. It can actually be the difference between driving change or not in your own self-development. When I work with people, 12-month programs, actually it's not the work they do with me in the coaching session, it's the work they do outside of that, where they've actually prioritized and diarized this time, where they've given themselves permission to step away from the workplace and actually have some thinking time, have some reflection time. They've used their commute to do it, or they've gone in half an hour early and found a quiet space to just think about actually what is it that I'm doing that's actually allowing me to make that change that I want to make. So I really encourage people to get into good routines and patterns around this and give it the priority it needs.
That's a fantastic point to end this session on. We often use the excuse that we're too busy for a lot of things, I suppose. But if we're aligned to the purpose of the profession, we have to be proactive in our own development to get results both now and in the future. So thanks for bringing that point home there. The next podcast we're going to do, which is going to be the last of the series, is looking at the big question that many people face when they're thinking about either moving roles or moving from one organization to the other, or even changing industries. I'm really looking forward to getting in that conversation with you, Anna, with all the experience you have. And I'm sure there'll be lots of folks that'll be interested in hearing what you have to say.
Great. Looking forward to it.
Okay. We'll chat to you then. See you soon.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Well, I don't know about you, but I got some really good information from that chat with Anna, and I just wanted to reflect on a few of the things that she said. There was quite a lot to take in, of course, throughout that half an hour conversation. So breaking it down to a few takeaways then, one of the major things that Anna identified is that we are very quick to settle for always having the answer and succumbing to that expectation. But she's found that we have to move beyond that if we're going to move onwards and upwards. So that realization of moving work away from ourselves is very, very important. Again, going back to that great analogy of giving a man a fish or teaching him how to fish. We need to move into teaching people how rather than keeping that information and that ability to perform tasks and so on to ourselves. Maybe it's something that you didn't even recognize that you're doing. Hopefully this reminder has given you the motivation to do something about it. Anna also recognized the importance of leveraging our strengths. So we also need to be able to identify them, and Anna gave us some tips on how we can do that by using sort of discovery through getting feedback from people and asking people what they think of what you're doing, and particularly people that you feel uncomfortable asking, because you'll often get more value from them. But also we need to be able to realize our limiting behaviors and what they are, so that they don't disable us. And to be able to do that effectively, we need to adopt a beginner's mindset. The last point, just to get you motivated then, is that we need to stop making excuses that we have no time to get proactive with our own self-development. We need to be more willing to be self-critical. And if we want to push things forward, we need to take action now to think about the long-term implications of how that's going to benefit us in the future. Believe it or not, Anna is going to be coming along to deliver even more free gold for you in the third and final installment of this mini-series. So hopefully you'll join us for that one. Cheers for taking the time out of your day to listen to our content here on the Safety Podcast. We really hope you found it valuable. And if you have a moment, please rate us on iTunes or whatever platform you're listening on. If you have even a minute, we would love you to write a review, positive or negative. Give us some feedback on what you've thought of this content. And hopefully we'll catch you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Safety Podcast. We would love you to tell us which episode you would like to hear. Don't forget to give us a shout at safetypodcast.com.